And hello, everybody. This is Patricia Corey, and you've tuned in to Beyond the Matrix. That's the radio show that asks you, implores you, invites you to think outside the box of convention while we still can. And after a rocking and rolling holiday, which was so nice, I am back pushing the envelope as always. And my guest today does that in great style, and yet he has that flair that I seem to lack, which is having the rational approach to the subject of one of my greatest interests, which of course is contact, extraterrestrial life, consciousness, and disclosure. I'm speaking of no other than Stephen Bassett, who has been on my show a number of times and is also featured in my book, Beyond the Matrix. And I am going to have him on in a minute, and I'm introducing him in more depth in a moment. But before I do that, I just want to share with you that when I was in Egypt, specifically on November 15th, I had 50 people in the Hatshepsut temple lying on the rock, on the ground, looking up at the stars. I just knew that rather than leading them in a meditation, I wanted them to look up. So I got everybody to lie down, and I called out and said, please come, please show yourselves, please, please make contact. And within a nanosecond, we got a blast of light in the sky, and we watched a craft traverse the sky. Someone said, oh my God, that can't be. Maybe it's a satellite. And this craft took a 90-degree turn and disappeared behind the moon or in front of the moonlight and then came back and must have done another 90-degree and kept trucking across the horizon. And as everybody, and I'm talking 47 people have confirmed that they saw this, as everybody gasped and celebrated, I said, it's not done yet. And bam, another one appeared on the other side of the skyline and started doing circles and demonstrative contact. We were all understanding that we were being shown that they got the invitation and decided to give us a view and a little excitement. So I want to share that with you before I bring Stephen on, because I really do believe, as I've said all along, that contact is imminent, and I just think we're so close now that part of the thrill of moving in to the 2012 paradigm is we are going to have it. So let's see what Stephen has to say. Stephen Bassett, if you haven't heard of him, which would surprise me, is a leading advocate for ending the 64-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding ET presence engaging the human race. He's a remarkable guy. He's a political activist, a lobbyist, a commentator. He's the executive director of Paradigm Research Group and the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, and also the executive producer of the annual X Conference. He's all over the media, and he's getting more and more coverage as he pursues this quest for disclosure. Since 1996, Stephen has assisted numerous organizations and initiatives working to raise public awareness of the extraterrestrial presence, as well as the truth embargo, and convene open congressional hearings to take government and agency witness testimony, and three, to incite the political media to appropriately cover the attendant issues. So without further delay, let's see what Stephen has in store for us today, because he's hinted at me that we're going to rock it. So I know we've got an update. Hi, Stephen. Thank you for coming back on the show.
Hi, Patricia. I like your intro.
I thought you would.
Well, the early one, the initial one, because, you know, I've been outside the box so long, I don't even know where the box is anymore.
I hear that. And more people are getting out of the box. And the wonderful thing is, of course, once you're out, you just can't get squeezed back in. So This is the time. This is the time when more and more people are flying with the eagles and understanding what's really going on around us.
Exactly. I have this very, very strong sense now that we are in the living in the very last days of this, what we call truth embargo, that the government made a decision for reasons that are very, you know, that can be supported. I mean, it's not that shocking that they made this decision, these decisions back in the late 40s and 50s, that this particular information regarding this extraterrestrial engagement had to be withheld and contained to the extent that they could, given the circumstances. Right. And it's 65 years now, and I think the basis for that containment is gone, and the awareness is extremely high, and the thing has to end, and that we are in the last days of that. It's somewhat analogous to the period when the Catholic Church was the dominant intellectual force in the Western world. Can't speak to the Eastern world on this. Tried to contain the nature of the solar system from its flock, from the people of Europe and so forth, because they just didn't think it would be a good idea given the Catholic doctrine and whatever their agendas were. It was a hopeless endeavor, but it did somewhat succeed for a while. This is kind of similar to that, but much more profound, much more intense. Yeah. So we're in the last days. I don't see how this truth embargo, this formal containment, can last through this year. Or even through the summer, frankly, but I'm not predicting, but rather sensing that my feeling about it is very strong, and the fact that it's happening in the year 2012, which, as we all know, has come to be a very intriguing calendar date due to some interesting aspects of a particular culture, the Mayan culture, with some mentions elsewhere, and it's become a symbol amongst people all over the world for change, transformation, and for some, apocalypse. And it's not a trivial thing. I mean, it's a big deal. There is a huge amount of awareness of this. The fact that it's happening in this year, I think it's one of the greatest coincidences in all of history, in terms of, you know, human history. But then we can't rule out it isn't connected, because if it were to happen, if the world's governments do acknowledge this ET presence, open that door at least, that one could easily make the case that that's the end of an era and the beginning of a new era that people have associated with the Mayan civilization. And
yeah, it's perfect timing for sure. And I would like to also suggest that it's a great vehicle for disclosure for those who still hold the secrets to plant the seeds and give us disclosure at this time, because that, with all the apocalypse information and with all the other stuff, as you've said, what better time than to hit the human race with this reality? Even though it looks like we're in disclosure for such a long time now, and that this process is really speeding up, because I'm sure you'll agree that we're getting all kinds of NASA reports, the more and more information about water on different planets, and it seems every day we're getting more of this contrite, leaked information to prepare people for the big announcement.
Well, the small d disclosure has been underway with respect to the ET issue for 65 years. That's been happening without question. It's happened in many ways. You have things the government have actually released. You have, of course, the product of document demands through the FOIA, and of course the research findings. You have witnesses coming forward. That's been going on, and it's a lot. If you add it all up, it's a very, very substantial body of evidence. But big D disclosure, which is, of course, what I am referring to, is not a process, but rather an event. It is the acknowledgement. It is the formal acceptance and acknowledgement by government to their people, which is actually, some don't think it's so important, and we just need to kind of just get the information out. But in fact, it is very, very important. And once governments do acknowledge this, a whole range of things could easily and very well happen that cannot happen under just small d disclosure, this formal acknowledgement. It's kind of a coming out. It's coming of age. And it does open the door to contact, in my view, though, again, my work is about disclosure, not contact. I'm not lobbying the extraterrestrials to have contact. They'll do that when they're good and ready. I say contact, open contact, because they're already contacting a lot of human beings under their own terms. So these kind of these are not distinctions without a difference, but nevertheless, people need to understand that disclosure is a self disclosing event, humans to humans. It is an act of honoring the social contract. Every nation has one. Some of them are better than others. America is kind of proud of its social contract, though it's been under assault for the last 44 years. Nevertheless, this act of disclosure is a massive honoring of that contract. It is a great moment of truth telling. It is a pulling down of a curtain where people are going to get a glimpse of the massive structures of secrecy and military intelligence, national security, and will undoubtedly prompt a broad-based review of how we are, the relationship between political governance, which every nation has, and the military national security structures, and also the role of secrecy in society. I believe that it will do that, and it could very well lead to the greatest age of reform that we've ever seen. That's just without ever having an ET come down and interview on Piers Morgan. You know what I mean? That's just for openers, right?
Right. All right. Well, the last time we talked, I think it was the last interview we did, I questioned whether or not it would be Obama. You went into great lengths explaining why Obama would be the president of choice to do it. And I questioned that and asked you, did you not consider that it could be another country? And you were pretty strong on it needed to be the U.S. And since then, we have heard some pretty interesting things coming out of some other countries like Mexico. And I'd like you to, if you could elaborate on your position on that now, given that we're starting to hear other countries talking about disclosure, like Mexico. Sure. And their discussion of that with proof that they're going to bring out in a film. Can you speak to that?
Of course. Let me perhaps clarify a little bit what I think I likely said, and obviously I've done a lot of shows. It's been a while. Let me clarify, because it's important that people understand my position. What I was saying is that President Obama posed. I mean, how can I phrase this? That of the previous presidents, Clinton and George W. Bush, Obama, in my view, was a more likely possibility, a candidate for achieving an arrangement with the military intelligence management. Exactly. Committees. And I went into that, and there are reasons for that. And given, of course, the state of the truth embargo and the disclosure process, that it looked very much like he was going to get the last chair when the music stopped. All right. I also, I think, would have mentioned that there are, I believe, and I guess I'm, as an American, one has to consider that I may have a xenophobic bias here, but I do believe, I believe objectively that there are some very good reasons why it would be best for the human race in general, if the United States was the lead nation here and initiated the disclosure process. But by and large, that assessment is more short term. In other words, in the short term, 4, 5, 10 years, it might be a benefit. Long term, I don't think it makes any difference whether it's the United States or China, Russia, United Kingdom, France, or even Brazil, which, by the way, just passed France as the sixth largest economy in the world. So that's where I'm at on that. Now, the facts are that the truth embargo was a policy of the United States with very clear cooperation from its key allies, such as Britain, obviously France, Canada, Australia, and the other nations that defeated the Axis powers. The Soviet Union and China I'm quite sure were aware of the ET presence, and they had no interest in going there for their own reasons, which are not difficult to understand. And so the truth embargo was off and running and well established, though how long it was going to go on was still in question. And I don't imagine that the national security people in the United States and perhaps even in the Soviet Union thought that this odd thing, this Cold War, was going to last as long as it did, 44 years, with a nuclear standoff. Of course, some of them thought there would be a nuclear war. I mean, that was their biggest concern. The next war would be maybe in the late 50s, and it would be nuclear, and of course they knew what that meant. But this idea of a standoff that would just go on with massive weapons being built and a constant threat of complete annihilation going on for 44 years, I think it kind of surprised them. But it certainly ensured that the truth embargo had to be maintained while those missiles were set to be launched. And, of course, the Soviet Union and China, their situation really did not alter during that period. So, again, they had no interest in bringing that issue into the ideological control governance that they had running. All of this, of course, changes when the Cold War ends in 1991. And ever since then, we have been on an inevitable track to disclosure. So this is the general position and historical basis for leading us to where we are now. Riding above all of that, of course, is the action of the extraterrestrials themselves, which I believe are from other planets. There are theories that they may be from other dimensions, even from other time. That's fine. I'm quite comfortable with other planets, and everything we're learning in astronomy today continues to increasingly support the fact that, yeah, other planets, other civilizations. So yeah. That's riding above all this, and what they're doing, they're doing. And one can make a case that their activities are quite in consonance with this disclosure process that we're going through, meaning they're helping it along, they're facilitating it, and nothing probably shows that better than the extraordinary, I'm going to give it about 20, let's see, let's go about 20 years, 24 years, the modern era, of the slow development of ever more complex, elaborate, and sizable crop circles or serial glyphs that we have been seeing. Putting aside the fact that some humans have done some fine work there, bless their hearts, the fact is that a good deal of these circles are non-human in origin. And as you watch their development, their unfolding complexity, it has all the earmarks of an escalating statement of presence, a very gentle one.
Say that. I'm not sure you've ever taken that stance on the crop circles before.
I know I have said it, not often. Crop circles is sort of off to the side of my main goals, but I've actually talked about this, oftentimes more in conferences. But no, I'm quite convinced. I mean, I know the research here. I know the researchers of the field. I know the situation, and I'm quite convinced they're extraterrestrial. There's just no way to explain some of these circles. I mean, some of them have turned up 15 minutes or less after the field had been viewed from the air, and I don't know how a human can do that. I'm talking circles that are 500 feet across.
Well, yeah, we've got the Julia set, which was a very important one for me, and that occurred in this, as you know, in the field across from Stonehenge in 45 minutes. That's 151 circles in perfect Fibonacci sequence, appearing on one of the most traveled roads in England in peak tourist season in the daytime.
Oh yeah, and one of the interesting things that some people don't reflect on when they think about this whole phenomena that's primarily in the United Kingdom, which is an interesting point in and of itself. Well, it is, because the fundamental center of this activity has been in the United Kingdom, in the same areas of the United Kingdom, and often in the same fields. And this has been going on for 20 years. Now, not surprisingly, lots and lots of people now go there every year for the show, for the season, they call it. It's like showing up, for the first football games in the NFL, the United States. They're driving around, they're camping out, they're setting up cameras on hills, they're flying light planes over these fields. So not surprisingly, we're having increasing instances where either somebody drives by or flies over a field on an excursion, I guess you could say, and then returns 15 minutes later in a massive graphic circle that wasn't there is now there. Now, it's possible that the military intelligence communities has the ability to lay down massive crop circles in 10 minutes using unbelievable technology. However, in the context of 65 years of evidence for an extraterrestrial presence, I'm really quite comfortable in saying that's ET technology. And it is clearly a kind of process which is screaming, we are here and we are letting you know that more emphatically each year. What are you going to do? Well, what we have to do, of course, is finally spill the beans and say, yeah, there is an ET presence. They're here. This is what we know, blah, blah, blah. And we have disclosure. So that's what's happening. And there are other processes which, again, have this kind of quality about them. And so my view in general is that we have a very powerful disclosure process on the ground being driven by human activity, human advocacy, and so forth. And we have a facilitating process going on above that is in the hands of the ETs. All of this is happening simultaneously. And when you put it all together, once again, I am very much stretched to conceive how the truth embargo, the formal policy, can extend through the summer, except if in this case, there are several things that could happen which could push that whole thing off of the public's table and delay it, right? And there are a number of things. One of the most concerning is a new war in the Middle East with Iran or an attack on Iran. And the other is a terrorist attack or whatever you want to call it, freelance attack using nuclear weapon. On a city.
I'm calling it a freelance attack.
Freelance attack. You know, the world is so interesting now that you don't have to have a nation. You don't have to have a big banker. You can actually blow some things up pretty well just working out of your basement. It's just another reason why we need to have to get our special act together. But yes. a nuclear event in the United States, whether it is a small weapon. And I can assure you, we don't have control, absolute control of all of this hardware, or whether it's a really good dirty bomb, a great deal of nuclear material piled around a great deal of C4. Either of these would trigger a draconian response, and could take us years and years and years into very, very unpleasant. Activity and disclosure could be literally driven out of the scene. It's like, you know, you're on the way to the hospital to get an extremely important treatment that you need to save your life, but unfortunately the car drives off the freeway and you don't make it to the hospital until, you know, 6 weeks later. It's kind of that situation. So it's a time-dependent thing. And so right now, disclosure from the advocacy point of view is really a process that is competing with a lot of old paradigm, highly destructive behavior and policies to see which is the next major event, which is the next breakthrough event or watershed event in human history. And when you look at it from that point, it's easy to understand why this advocacy is important and why it needs to be funded, why it needs to be driven faster, so that we can get that done. Now, what happens after disclosure, we can't say. A lot of bad things could still happen, but they will, and I think this is very important and critical, they will happen in the post-disclosure world, not the pre-disclosure world.
Well, to suggest that an event could happen in the United States that could trigger something in the Middle East, and I know I'm getting off track here, may be a little bit, let's say, and I don't want to call you naive, but let's say innocent from the point of view that it seems like every attempt is being made instead to go right in there to find the way in, and that the storm is a brew in the Middle East. So I hope that human intelligence, sure, human compassion reign long enough for us to slow that process down and
stop
it.
Let me be clear, Patricia. What I was saying was that, and actually it's the reverse, that there are a number of things that could happen. One of those is a profound event in the Middle East, particularly this issue with Iran, which is very, very, ripe right now. I mean, something big could happen. The other would be an event in the United States, not necessarily connected to Iran, but simply an attack of a nuclear type. Because, and I invite all of your listeners, if they don't get this, to simply get through Netflix the documentary Countdown to Zero. Just watch it. That's all you'll need to do. You won't need much more than that. But I can also connect the two. In that, if there is a significant event in the Middle East along the range of an attack on Iran, particularly on Iran, that event, if it involves Israel or the United States or both, I have a great fear will provide in the minds of certain elements and groups a moral license then to escalate their actions and give them the moral license to use nuclear. This is the tit-for-tat arms race mentality that has plagued us since as far back as we can go in recorded history, and of course has led to thousands of wars, untold suffering. We're still there. We haven't emerged from that yet. And so somebody invades Iran. Another group says, fine, we're going to nuke Washington, D.C. The United States goes, oh, that's pretty nasty business. We're going to nuke everybody, whatever. You see what I'm talking about. This is not fantasy. This is actively discussed in Washington by not only independent think tanks, but by the government itself. And you can actually find reports about this. They are deeply concerned this can happen. Do they go out of their way enough to really educate the American people about these kind of risks? No. You got to go find it. You've got to go find the documentary Countdown to Zero and watch it. The government's not going to suggest that you do that. The government wants us to generally kind of stay out of their way, don't really pay too much attention, and they'll kind of deal with it in their own good time or not deal with it at all. And of course, that is insanity. It's a huge mistake, and increasingly more people know this, and they're using the internet to challenge that whole concept. But the final act of this play is not over. It can go very well. It can go very, very badly. My role is involved in the disclosure movement, and the getting of that event done, making sure it happens, doing everything we can to help it happen, whatever other forces are involved. So that it is out of the way before the next set of behavioral outbreaks occur around the world, and they will probably occur. But in a post-disclosure world, we can make a case that we may respond and handle them better, and the outcomes won't be nearly as bad as they might be under the old paradigm modality.
Indeed. And this brings up a beautiful segue into the question of how we have heard some reports where we have declarations that some sort of craft was sending in a beam into certain military bases and either neutralizing or throwing off the computer systems that support nuclear weaponry. And mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you how you feel that ties in with what we're talking about.
It's a very significant tie-in. It's some of the most important evidence that we have, thanks to the extraordinary work of Robert Hastings and the great courage of a number of Air Force officers, all now retired, all who had the highest level clearances because they were working on nuclear SAC bases, in many cases, that have testified to the fact that the extraterrestrials, going back decades, and possibly even as recently as a few years ago, have been tampering with our weapons, our nuclear weapons, such as turning them off.
Let me just, excuse me for interrupting you, but when you say tampering with, that kind of makes me spooked, but turning them off I like a lot better.
No, there's no evidence that they have made them more likely to blow up in their silos or anything. No, these are events that almost always involve either a kind of checking up, right? Sort of, you know, see what you got here right now, or yeah. a turning off. The officers involved have testified at the National Press Club. There is a book out about this called UFOs and Nukes, and a considerable effort has been made to try to draw the media into what is, I think, a pretty obviously significant topic. The media, bless their pointy little heads, have by and large stood down on this. They just said, nah, we can't go there because it's the truth embargo, and we know we don't really cover that, at least not beyond a certain point. But the fact, thank God for the internet, because of course all of this is out there and it's never going away. So this particular evidence, which is subject to interpretation, is extremely important. They're not coming down, putting a craft over a SAC base like Malmstrom in 1976, or 67 rather, and turning off the weapons just for the hell of it. There is a reason. Now, the officers involved, most of them, not all of them, believe that the reason was to send a very clear message that at minimum these weapons were useless as far as dealing with them, and also very much likely that these weapons are just generally useless. They're stupid. In an advanced technology, you easily disengage them. All they are is a massive threat to you and to a good deal of the life on the planet. So what the hell are you doing, right? It is one of the most overt things that they have done in a general sense like that. They are interacting with huge numbers of human beings. I mean, hundreds of thousands, and I'm serious about this, hundreds of thousands of written accounts from people of all walks of life, including taxi cab drivers and bus drivers and lawyers and doctors and members of the military, have been collecting in the research files of the leading researchers into the contact phenomena. The best known, of course, were Hodgkins and Jacobs and Mack, but there are a number of others. And Whitley Strieber, I don't know if he'd be considered a researcher like John Mack, but he is obviously hugely involved in this issue and has written extensively about it. I believe that he and Ann have received a minimum of 250,000 letters. That's a massive, you know, outpouring. And these accounts are about contact with ETs, much of which is not invited or wanted, and some of which, a lot of which, is not comfortable. And there is an extraordinary degree of consistency in these accounts. Now, all of this, according to Harvard University, is nothing more than sleep paralysis.
Right.
which Harvard University, I can tell you, is going to be living down for as long as that campus is parked in Boston.
Oh, yeah. That's why the Vatican changed its position and said, okay, you can think about you, we can consider ETs now because they would be children of God, just so that when we get disclosure, they won't have to be so terribly embarrassed.
200 years from now, people in a book they might write, or an article they might write, or as an aside while presenting something in Harvard University, are going to be mentioning, yeah, and what about that sleep paralysis thing you were shoving out the door? at the end, near the end of the truth embargo, and how the way you treated John Mack, who was probably one of the most important men of the 20th century, how did that go for you? And they'll be going, well, you know, we got confused, or so. I mean, that's not the only group that's going to be having to live down just a complete detachment from rational thinking for purely self-interest, meaning it's in the interest of Harvard that we play the role of the Catholic Church on the Copernican Revolution in the 20th century. And I'm going, you know, what did the chancellors of the university, when did they get together, and how many drinks have they had before they came up with that policy? So I'm diverging here, but now let me update your audience on one of the very cool things that's happening in the last days of the truth embargo. Again, what has happened is on September the 22nd of last year, the White House, the Obama administration, launched a petition process on the White House website, which is still there and is called We the People. And there's an easy link right there on the site. The tens of millions of people that go to that site every month can easily find this section. And in the interest of collaborative democracy, in the interest of open government, in the interest of collecting millions of email addresses that they might be able to send some nice, you know, remarks about the administration to as we approach the next billion-dollar presidential campaign, they invited people to send petitions, people and organizations to send petitions regarding any issue that you consider right. important, asking the government to take whatever action you feel was appropriate. Absolutely wonderful. Great. I don't know what they thought it would go. I do know they were concerned that it might be huge and that they very low-keyed way launched this. The president never spoke about it. There wasn't much coverage, and they just launched it. And they were right, because within the first 30 days, they received between 10 and 20,000 petitions
wow.
to that website about 10 and to 20,000 issues. Mm-hmm. That number, we're not sure, but it's in that range because some reporters have inquired. Now, the rules of this process were that you have to get the signatures. We're not in the signature gathering process. We are in the petition receiving game. And you have to get 150 from your closest friends and relatives before this will even be posted on the White House website. And that's harder than you might think. And so of the 10 to 20,000 petitions that were submitted in that period from September 22nd and toward the end of October, only about 300 were posted to the website. Once posted, or once submitted and then posted, you had 30 days from the submission date to generate 20,000 signatures. I'm sorry, 5,000 signatures for your petition in order to receive a formal response from the White House as to your request for action. When that's a pretty significant thing. And of those petitions that were submitted, only about 292.8, somewhere in that range, achieved that threshold. Now, as it happens, that threshold, because of the massive number of petitions that were submitted, was raised to 25,000 signatures in 30 days on or about October 8. But, because it's my job, I was, of course, aware of this pending initiative on the part of the White House. And I think the third petition that was submitted on September the 22nd was the disclosure petition, as it is called. That the information about that petition resides at the home base for this process, PRG's process, Paradigm Research Group, disclosurepetition.info. Now, this was all part of a very planned advocacy project. Mm-hmm. And the first petition is called the disclosure petition because for obvious reasons, and it reads as follows. We petition the Obama administration to formally acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race, disclosure. And then it is expanded in the information section. The full petition is, we, the undersigned, strongly urge the President of the United States to formally acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race and immediately release into the public domain all files from all agencies and military services relevant to this phenomenon. This petition had 150 signatures in an hour, and it had 5,000 signatures in 4 days, thus ensuring it would get a formal response from the White House. It ultimately received 12,000 signatures. This is not a massive number by any means, though it was a good number relative to the other petitions. And the formal response to that petition came on November the 4th. Some people didn't understand what was happening here. They thought the purpose of this was to actually get Obama to disclose, meaning he'd get this petition, he would have 12,000 signatures, and say, oh boy, that's it, jig's up. Call up the Department of Defense, let's have a meeting, we're going to tell the people about the ET presence. No, there was no chance. What this petition was about the formal response. they had set up a process which, if we met some relatively easy criteria, we would get a formal response. Well, guess what? There had never been a formal position by the executive branch on the ET presence in history, ever. They had deliberately avoided that. They had dodged and weaved and ducked and covered, because to do that would have been a real problem for the truth embargo. And lo and behold, it appeared that they were going to provide this 64 years, a little over 64 years after Roswell and the beginning of the modern UFO era. And there was several ways they could go. I wasn't sure which way they would go, though I was almost certain that the response would come from the Executive Office of Science and Technology Policy, the OSTP. They could have written a nuanced, subtle response that provided maneuverability, right, to handle the further actions, questions, or they could have taken a hard line. Well, they took the hard line. They took the diamond line. It's that hard.
Uh-huh.
And a member of the OSTP staff, perfectly nice fellow I've talked to, was assigned the job to write this statement. He wasn't assigned the job to go out and research the entire phenomena going back 60 years and then and say what the government thinks about it. He was basically said to write a statement and given probably some fundamental parameters, and then it was signed off on by the OSTP director, Dr. John Holden, and out it goes. Whether Obama signed off, we don't know. But this statement was a gift from the cosmos, because it states this. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but because it's not very long, but I'm not going to read the whole thing. But here's what it says. Thank you for signing the petition asking the Obama administration to acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence on Earth. Well, you're welcome. Thank you so much. That's good. And here it comes, right? You know, wait for it, folks. The U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet, or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race. In addition, there is no credible information to suggest that any evidence is being hidden from the public's eye. Well, let me tell you, there's probably a half a billion people in the planet, and a minimum, that know instantly that that statement is completely false.
Right.
And a good deal number of them know it's utterly indefensible if they had to defend it. That is now the formal position of the executive branch of the government. Doesn't mean it's the formal position of President Barack Obama personally or John Holdren personally, but that is the formal position. And now we have it. It is a stationary target. It is an indefensible statement of policy. That was the whole purpose of the disclosure petition. Now, the next step was to challenge that position, to challenge the formal statement of the United States government in every way possible and break it. And if we break it, now what I mean by break it means that at some point the political media look at it, compare it to what is known, stuff that's been sent to them over the decades or new material that comes out, and say, obviously, this is totally false and indefensible. I think I'm going to trot on down to the Department of Defense and ask Leon Panetta about it. Or I think I'll go over to the State Department and talk to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton spokesperson. Or I think I'm going to bring it up at the next White House press briefing with Jay Carney. Once they do that, and they haven't, ask a few key questions, the answers they're going to get are probably going to trigger a media firestorm that will make the Lewinsky media firestorm look like a little campfire out in the woods. So, what is one of the things that we're doing? Well, Disclosure Petition 2, the Rockefeller Initiative. Now, Disclosure Petition 2, the Rockefeller Initiative, is specifically designed to directly confront the statement from the OSTP that there is not, and you know, clearly by inference, never has been any evidence for extraterrestrial life or life outside the planet, or that the government is hiding anything. What is Disclosure Petition 2? It is reads as follows. And when I say reads, what you submit up there is the title to the petition, which may be the whole petition itself, and you have 800 characters of information that you can provide attached to it. So the information is as every bit as important as the petition. And here is Disclosure Petition 2. We petition the Obama administration to demand a full congressional investigation of UFOET disclosure efforts by the Clinton Office of Science and Technology Policy, the Rockefeller Initiative. In response to the disclosure petition, the Office of Science and Technology Policy stated, the U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any members of the human race. If true, what was the Office of Science and Technology Policy investigating from March of 1993 to October of 1996 in concert with billionaire and Clinton friend Lawrence Rockefeller? Those who knew of and have not spoken publicly of this initiative include Bill Clinton, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Obama Transition Co-Chair John Podesta, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta, Dr. John Gibbons, Albert Gore, and Governor Bill Richardson. And then it says C, www Paradigm Research Group Rockefeller Initiative documents, and www.presidentialufo.com /Clinton, where the documents confirming the above statements are right there for anybody in the world to see, the government documents confirming it. I think you can see, Patricia, that this is a, how would you say, cloth of a different color. Uh-huh. That it's one thing to say, well, we can't disclose the ET presence because there's no evidence. Now they have to respond to this rather extraordinary irony that it was the very OSTP that just said there is no evidence that entertained a 2.5-year investigation by during the Clinton administration as part of billionaire Rockefeller, Lawrence Rockefeller's efforts to get Bill Clinton to reignite full investigations of the phenomena and release all files into the public domain. Now, there's, and worse, the people that were involved, and we can prove that from the documents, have just happened to have gone on to become some of the most powerful people in the world. And right. These powerful people in the world, one of whom aspires to be the president of the United States, one of who was the president of the United States, one who was a chief of staff to the president of the United States, one who was a chief of staff to a president, the head of the CIA, and the Secretary of Defense, have never felt the need to ever publicly mention the entire initiative that took place in the White House OSTP on taxpayers' dollar, nor have they ever been asked a single question about it. That poses a real problem. So, on December the 1st, that petition was submitted to We the People, and within about 15 minutes, it had 150 signatures and was posted onto the White House website on December the 1st. However, under the new guidelines, it needed 25,000 signatures in order to require a response to the petition. Now, as it happened, as of December 1st, somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million people had already opened an account at We the People and signed petitions. The awareness of the We the People project, of course, was magnitudes greater than it was in September 22nd. And so the possibility of getting 25 signatures was still quite reasonable.
25,000.
25,000 rather. And just to be clear, what you have to do is the same thing you have to do to sign up for an account with AT&T or Amazon.com or any one of thousands of commercial operations on the web. You have to open an account by providing your first and last name, your city and state, and your email address. They then email you back a confirmation email. You have a link in there you have to click that confirms that you're the person that's setting it up. And then you have a password. You use the password to log back in to We the People, whereupon you can sign all the petitions your heart desires. And there's even an account section where you can change the password and to the name of your pet Doberman Pinscher, whatever.
Stephen, I have to interject that we've got 4 minutes left, so I need you to tell us what is the essential aspect of this petition and what you want my listeners to do to support you.
Real simple. After the petition was submitted, the White House website came apart like a North Korean watch. It collapsed. You couldn't sign, you couldn't log in, you couldn't create an account. It wouldn't work with the Opera browser, it wouldn't work with the Chrome browser. People were sending scores of emails to me and other people with petitions up there saying, they're upset, they were trying for days, and of course it was a disaster. And as a result, thousands and thousands of people all over the world could not sign the petition, they couldn't get an account open, and the whole thing went nowhere. So there was no chance of the petition receiving 25,000 signatures. Okay. We have confirmed with the White House staff that, in fact, yes, they did have huge problems. The site was down, and they're fixing it. Okay, good. Okay, fine. So sometime later this month, not too long from now, in January, we're resubmitting the disclosure petition, too, to the White House with a whole lot of media flourish, press releases, and what have you, seeking 25,000 signatures in 30 days, assuming that the White House website will actually work. That's what's about to happen. We need people to get ready. You can learn about this by going to disclosurepetition.info, where the direct link will be put up immediately upon the submission of that petition. If we can get people who want the truth about this, who believe they have a right to know, who believe they can handle the truth, to go and put those 25,000 signatures up immediately so that we get them in 4, 5, or 6 days, it will become a major global story. And sometime in February, the White House is going to have to respond to this. It is my view that this process, if the public will sign on, if they will get behind it, has the potential to trigger the media firestorm I mentioned and bring the truth embargo to an end, finally, 65 years after Kenneth Arnold saw those crescent-shaped craft near Mount Rainier. And so, the key site is disclosurepetition.info. The petition, Disclosure Petition 2, the Rockefeller Initiative, will be submitted soon. There will be in the media. There is also a Facebook page for it. But disclosurepetition.info is where you want to go. You will also be able to go directly to the White House site, We the People, and find it. If you haven't got an account, go open it now. That way, when the petition goes up, you'll be able to sign it in a few seconds. Get ready. Get prepared. Tell your friends and colleagues about it on your Facebook, on your MySpace, on your email list. Go to disclosurepetition.info. Grab some of the banner links. Put them up on your website with a link to disclosurepetition.info, and then eventually you can change the link directly to the petition on the White House website.
Okay, fantastic.
What's going on,
Patricia? Wrap it up, unfortunately, because we're at the end of the show. So, people, if you are putting energy into the thought that it's time, put your energy behind this initiative and help Stephen and his people get that critical mass so we can push this thing ahead and finally get truth embargo to end, so that part of our amazing 2012 journey will include finally disclosure from the government. And with that, I want to thank Stephen. Always a delight to have you, Stephen. Thank you for updating us on your work.
Very welcome.
And I want to remind everyone that I am, as every year, bringing people to the Crop Circles for exploration again this year. In fact, I might have to do two groups because there's a waiting list to get on this program. So I'm still in the process of setting the dates. If you are interested in being on that program, please write to me at info@syrianrevelations.net and ask to be put on the priority list for that program, and I'll get that to you soon. All right, people, I have to go. I'm sorry. The time always flies. We'll keep you up to date on more of the phenomenon that as I gather information, and you are too. So let's pull the finger out, as the British say, and move into the power zone. And Stephen's website, another website that you'll want to check out is paradigmresearchgroup.org, where you can learn more about what these people are up to. Thanks again, Stephen. Tune in 2 weeks from now to Beyond the Matrix, where you are invited to get out of that box and stay out. And I thank you. This is Patricia Corey. Can't wait for disclosure. Can't wait for our friends to finally appear and light up the skies with light, because that's what I think is coming. Nano, Patricia Corey, signing out.